Good evening. Today is Monday, April 1st, and we're studying the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This week's chapter is The Doctor's Opinion, and our speaker tonight is Rachel Y. Thank you, Rachel.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much, Meredith. Thank you, Heidi. Thank you, everyone doing service here tonight. My name is Rachel Y. I am a recovered compulsive overeater restrictor from Pennsylvania. Today is my day 87 of abstinence, so I'm so close to 90. It's very exciting. So tonight I'll be talking about doctor's opinion. I'll be speaking on that chapter. And just briefly, I want to show you all some pictures. This is kind of a neat moment. I hope it works on my phone, but I think it will. Let's see. All right. So we're going to start with, let me see. Oh, this is very interesting. Bear with me, please. Oh, you know what? I'm going out of order. I have ADHD. I apologize. I just want to call in my higher power, which I call God, and take a moment to be still and stay calm and not let my major defect, which is anxiety, get the best of me. So thank you so much. All right, so can everybody see my picture? I hope you can see. This is me at 5 years old, and my name's Rachel Elizabeth. They used to call me Rachel a little bit because I literally did not eat. It drove my parents insane. I would not eat. I think I had like texture issues. But it was really the bane of my father's existence, and we had it out a bunch of times. I was very stubborn, and I would not eat anything, and we would just sit at the table, and I would be told to eat and kind of forced to eat. And it was kind of the beginning of me feeling like I wasn't able to regulate my own hunger or needs. I'm not really sure when this is. It's all a blur, but it was in my 20s at some point. This was not my lowest weight or my highest weight, but it was the most kind of the weight that I had kept the most general weight. This was like my baseline. Looked really happy. I was really, really miserable and sad and traumatized and emotionally dysregulated. Here's another one. I just spent basically from age, I dealt with some abuse at home. Some mental and verbal abuse, emotional abuse. And I spent from age like 6 to 42, masking and dysregulated. Here I am pregnant in 2008. This was my top weight. I was 280 pounds. I think my bottom weight as an adult was like 180, so about 100 pounds. And during this time when I was pregnant with my first child, I developed gestational diabetes. This was sort of my lower weight. This was about 200 pounds after college. I was about 25. These are out of order. Sorry, I'm just kind of showing you the up and down. Here I am again with my first child pregnant, 280, gestational diabetes. I was insulin dependent. I had to test my blood sugar, and I was still not scared. I did not hit bottom still. It was just very, very dysregulated, not really getting the severity of it. My daughter ended up being really big, and I was forced to have a C-section with her. It was a really traumatic birth experience, and now she suffers a lot with PCOS and fear of developing diabetes because of the gestational diabetes. So it didn't just harm me. Here's another one at my lower weight, less masking, more legit how I feel. This is my teenage years. They were really, really awful. I found a lot of pictures. Here's another one at my higher weight again. This is many, many years later. I had already become pre-diabetic after losing the gestational diabetes. I was pre-diabetic again, a little more scared because I had three children now and I was really worried about losing my health. My teenage years, I was a mess, totally dysregulated. I got married very young. Here we go, my child again. I have a lot. Here's my today. I took this picture today. I am what they talk about with the entire psychic change. I don't even like I will stop myself and not even recognize who I am anymore, which is a really beautiful thing. I haven't dissociated since starting program, which if you don't know, it's a psychological term for kind of sort of like daydreaming, but a little more severe, where you kind of can't stay in the moment and you can't be present with people because of like like your nervous system just pulls the ripcord. This is my sort of my weight chart, which you can see it's lots of ups and downs since 2017. I joined program in November 2003, so it's very much at the very, very end. But I wanted to show this because this is also my healing journey from all the trauma and all the different things. It represents so much to me besides, it's my journey in parenthood and recovering from generational trauma. I almost forgot the word. So I wanted to share that as well because that represents so much for me. And so lots and lots of mental health conditions, or so I thought. I kept searching for an answer. I kept trying all different kinds of medications. Nothing was working. And I got to a point where I was 40, and I do a lot of different things for my work, but I'm an artist. And I was doing a podcast and I interviewed my friend who was a medium. And he just said to me, I think when you're 42, you're going to have this wild, dramatic change. And that's sort of when all of this kind of started to grow in me, where I was actually seeking a spiritual experience. That is why I came to these rooms. Actually, I had learned about a very long time ago, but I had learned about the spiritual experience component through podcasts. Actually, I'm drawn to a lot of podcasts where people are recovering addicts. Surprise, surprise, they were my people. And I thought to myself, oh my God, how can I qualify? Because I need to be a part of this program. Like, this is speaking to me so much. I had spent a very long time in search of a religion or a path spiritually that would feed my soul and sort of help me figure this whole thing out, figure out what this life was all about. And I was a Christian. I was raised a Christian when I was young. When my parents split, thankfully, my mom left my dad. I was 11. We stopped going to church. I used to beg my mom, please, can we please go to church? It was really hard for me because I guess even as a young person, I felt really connected to the spiritual experience. And so I spent a really long time on a pagan path, just thinking I could do this on my own in nature. And I didn't really need to follow the rules of the Bible, which was the way I was raised. And that was really difficult for me, which is why I ended up at this meeting, because choosing my own conception was really important and valuable to me. But okay, so I just want to focus in on a couple things. I've taken a million notes, but I want to say, the disease of compulsive overeating, as we all know from the OA and 12 and 12. And if you don't know, I apologize. From the OA 12 and 12, it's threefold, of course, physical, emotional, and spiritual. So physically, in November of this year, I had become, or last year, I had become pre-diabetic again. I had lost a bunch of weight doing kind of like an abstinence, but self-regulated abstinence. It ended up being a lot of restricting, a lot of fasting, and really, really dangerous. I'm a vegan. I've been a vegan since 2018, a vegetarian before that. So I ended up having some iron deficiency, and it was really affecting my wellness. And so I kind of slowly introduced sugar again. I had cut sugar. I slowly introduced sugar again, thinking I can handle it. Of course, I'm one of these alcoholics. I can handle it now. I can handle it now. I've got out of control again. And I ended up in the doctor's office. And when I think of doctor's opinion, I'm thinking of my doctor, because I'm kind of thinking of the two of them, thinking of Dr. Silkworth and thinking of my doctor, Dr. Johnson. And thinking that the message was kind of similar in that my doctor said to me, basically, you're hopeless at this point. He had seen me through the first diabetes. He knew about the gestational diabetes. Turns out my dad just was diagnosed with diabetes. The whole one side of my family is very, very, very sick with this disease of compulsive overeating, to the point where my one aunt was bedridden for the last like 5 years of her life. Prior to that, she had to slither around on the floor to get around, like really, really, really awful disease in our family. And he said to me at our session, at our appointment on November 27th, that he was really concerned and I needed to go to weight management and I needed to get some holistic help where they could talk about, my mental health, my stress level, all these different things, do blood work and all this. And I said, great, that sounds wonderful. So I made an appointment. It's in June. So meanwhile, I'm sitting here like, what am I going to do? And he says, I want you to try Ozempic. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And he's like, why? And I said, I don't really want to, inject myself. And he was not really fully with me on that. But I could see in his face, and I've known this man for about 10 years, that he had completely given up hope on me. And when I read doctor's opinion days later, I was like, oh, holy shit. This is like Dr. Johnson is seeing this in me and not able to communicate it. Am I at 10 minutes already?
About 10 to go,
I
halfway.
can, I'm so sorry. I'm yakking so much about all this. I need about an hour, Amy. Thank you. But I thought to myself, oh my gosh, saying it, which I just want to stop and pause for a minute and say, God bless Dr. Silkworth and whatever the time that it was then, because they were speaking truth to their patients. And can you imagine nowadays a doctor saying to you, like, you're hopeless as fuck. Like, you need to get some help in X, Y, and Z, and please go to AA. Like, I don't even think some of my doctors won't even discuss my weight with me at all. For example, I had a really bad case of sciatica. It never came up. If you lose weight, this will help your sciatica. It never came up. They wouldn't discuss it with me. It's like such a strange taboo to discuss this. So I thought to myself, my doctor thinks I'm hopeless. Fast forward, went right. I said, I'm going to try OA. Let me try OA. He's like, okay, because Ozempic is back ordered for 6 months anyway. So I'm like, wonderful. So I would have just spent 6 months sitting there not knowing what to do with myself. So I think within the next day or so, I went to my first OA move. My first OA meeting, this was my second. So my first OA meeting is a local one in Philadelphia. And as soon as I entered the room, they said, welcome home. We'll love you until you can love yourself. And I just fell apart. So anybody at this meeting knows I cry a lot, especially in the beginning. But let's get to it. The doctor's opinion. When I read this with my sponsor, I just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed because the main thing that I get from it is that it's not my fault. So if you're new here, or you're going through any kind of tough time right now, just remember it is not your fault. And I'll tell you what, that was the most freeing moment of my life was when I read that and my sponsor and I discussed that this is not my fault. This is a disease where this whole life of mine has been just fully in shame of all of the things that I've done and all of the decisions that I've made. This one chapter of 8 pages flipped my life upside down, changed my perspective completely. And frankly, really, I just surrendered. I said to myself, if this much profound power is in this short chapter, then I'm going to keep with this and I'm going to give this a chance. So, of course, we all know, I apologize again to any newcomer that doesn't know, but what they talk about in doctor's opinion is the allergy and then the mental twist, which the allergy would be that when I put these foods in my body, which my alcoholic foods are flour and sugar, which was really hard to accept in the beginning. But that is what it is. That when I put them in my body, it sets off this reaction in me that craves so intensely more and more and more and more and more. And it takes over all my thoughts. It has run so many of my children's birthdays. It's run so many of my celebrations with my family. It was all about the food always. It's run relationships. It's just been running my life for so long. And I can't say that when I was that little girl that I had this obsession, but it developed very quickly in me and has definitely been progressive because when I went through and looked at all the different kinds of alcoholics, I've been all of them and it kept getting worse until I was at my bottom where I was going to die because there was just no other option. I had to fully surrender to this after reading this. So I'm just going to read a little bit from this. If you haven't heard it before, you should really get a copy of this. It's also free online. So as I mentioned in Dr. Silkworth's letter, he talks about I attended a patient who thought he had been a competent businessman of good earning capacity. I have like an MFA. I don't have a regular job. I cannot hold a regular job. Was an alcoholic of a type I had come to regard as hopeless, completely hopeless. I personally know scores of cases who were of the type with whom other methods had failed completely. I had tried therapy. I had tried medication. I had tried all kinds of woo-woo stuff and everything around the corner. I had tried coping with food through love and sex addiction, to which ended up with me restricting and becoming really ill. I've tried every method except for this. These facts appear to be of extreme medical importance because of the extraordinary possibility of rapid growth inherent in this group. They may mark a new epoch of the annals of alcoholism. These men may well have a remedy for thousands of such situations. You may rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves. So this is Dr. Silkworth's first letter, which, if you don't know the big book, he has a first letter and then he has comments in like a second letter. For me to hear that a doctor said, "You may rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves," for me, it sends me into such shock, because in our modern day, I feel like I've had so many experiences with the medical community where, unfortunately, and this is not across the board, of course, but I've dealt with a lot of medical gaslighting. And just to hear these words, I wanted to, like, I was like Googling Dr. Silkworth, what kind of man was this? Or was this kind of how the doctors were then? But I'll tell you what, whatever the case, it doesn't even matter, because what's in this book and the combination of he and Jung and all the different people that were involved in this, it is truly a magical and incredible program. So it goes on to talk about, in this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture, compulsive overeating torture, must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our eating, right? Just because we were maladjusted to life. I was very maladjusted to life. As I mentioned, I was dissociated much of my life and I couldn't control it. That we were in full flight from reality, 100%, or we were outright mental defectives. I would say, yeah, with COVID, I became, people that know me very well felt that I was becoming agoraphobic. Sorry, I was really, really in deeply in the fear. This is not talked about in the doctor's opinion, but I was definitely controlling the situation. I was the director. I was the baby queen, I'll call it, because I was like, everybody baby me and I'm in charge. It was really, 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 really destroying my children's lives and my family's lives and people that I worked with and my life. So it goes on to say, the doctor's theory that we have an allergy to the alcohol interests us, or the food, right? As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers or eaters, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. So here's the why. Though we work out our solution on the spiritual as well as the altruistic plane, we favor hospitalization for the alcoholic who is very jittery or befogged. I just learned about hospitalization this past week, and I realized that during my recovery, I put myself in hospitalization, as in I was just completely immersed in the program, and really was not exposing myself to things that I thought would trigger me. There's a couple other things I want to share before I have time. So here's Dr. Silkworth again. Says, the subject presented in this book seems to me to be of paramount importance to those afflicted with the alcoholic addiction or overeating. He's saying how he says this after many years of experience in one of the oldest hospitals as the director. We doctors have realized for a long time that some form of moral psychology was of urgent importance to alcoholics, compulsive overeaters, but its application presented difficulties beyond our conception. What with our ultra-modern standards in 1939, so now it's even wilder, the standards, our scientific approach to everything, we are perhaps not well equipped to apply the power of good that lie outside of our synthetic knowledge. I love that line so much. And then I wrote, only alcoholics can truly help other alcoholics. I just saw something, excuse me, on Instagram. Right now, our healthcare system is costing the most that it's ever cost, and we are the sickest that we've ever been. This is not making any sense. I feel like actually in 1939, the doctors were more open to this sort of approach than they are now. I don't know if anybody else agrees with me. It's just my experiences in medical issues. It feels like a comprehensive approach was much more appreciated then. And maybe because of this book, it was. Or maybe Dr. Silkworth was a very special kind of person. But that's always really struck me about this, is that he was willing to kind of write a prescription. I think in China, they write prescriptions to go out in nature, right, for your mental health. This kind of reminds me of Dr. Silkworth. So he's talking about one of his patients and saying, I wanted to say this before I have to go, or before I have to end. I'm sorry. Let me see. He's talking about the allergy and all the different types.
That's your time. Finish your thought.
Oh,
Finish your
okay,
thought.
no. Okay, let me just say one more thing. Okay. Although he gives all that is in him, it often is not enough. One feels that something more than human power is needed to produce the essential psychic change. So I'll end with that. I thought that was a really beautiful passage. So thank you all so much. That went really fast. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you, Rachel. We will now open the meeting for questions or for 3-minute shares. As this is a big book study, sharing and questions should relate specifically to the chapter and step being studied this week. We ask you to accept this guideline in order to keep the meeting on track. If you would like to share or ask a question, please raise your virtual hand, which is under reactions, or *9 if you're on the phone. I will call the raised hands in order, and the Zoom host will ask you to unmute when it's your turn. Will the timekeeper please set a timer for 3 minutes for each share and announce when time is up? If the speaker is asked a question, please allow 3 minutes for the answer. Hey, look at all those hands. Amy B. Thanks, everybody. Amy B, compulsive overeater. Let me get the timer start. There we go. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Meredith. Thank you, Heidi, for your service tonight. Everyone who's read, who's shown up tonight for your service as being part of it. Rachel Y, thank you so much for speaking tonight, for kicking us off for our 9th round through the book. 9 is 3 times 3. 3 is a
My
special.
favorite number.
It's a real special thing, and the doctor's opinion is a very special chapter to me, and I know to a lot of us. And I want to talk about the principles and not the speaker. I don't want to crosstalk. There is when the entire psychic change happens to someone. It comes through. There is both a recognition of, I'll say my own experience or what I seem to notice is that there's a recognition of a different way of viewing the time before the psychic change, and then a sort of you can't unsee it once you've seen it afterwards. And to be in this program and get to witness that happen for people. And witness them learning to not only have the awareness, but the vocabulary around it. And the doctor's opinion gives us some of that vocabulary right at the very beginning. I know it did and continues to for me. And I love the chapter. I love going through the chapter with people, especially new folks. I think the doctor's opinion is really a series of personal questions that we can answer with our own personal experience and feelings to determine whether, in fact, we are right for an entire psychic change. And I'm just so grateful for this book and this community. Rachel, thank you so much for your service. I'm going to pass and listen to the rest of the shares tonight. Thank you. Thank you, Amy. Heidi B, you're up.
Thank you so much, Rachel. It's such a pleasure to hear you. I'm glad that I was here for your first share. Oh my God, so many things I relate to. When I came back from relapse in March 2021, I saw my doctor on March 2nd. Oh, and let me actually back up for a second. When I came to the program for the first time in 2003, I had just had weight loss surgery. I had weight loss surgery, and then I found out about OA. And that's how I got here. And then in 2021, March 2nd, I saw my doctor. I was the highest weight that I had been even before the surgery when I had, in 2003. And he said to me, "I think you need to have weight loss surgery," because he had given up on me. My blood pressure was like through the roof and, whatever. And I was just like floored. And I was like, "I've done that." That didn't work for me. And, by the grace of a power that I do not understand, I came back to the rooms and somehow got abstinent by the end of that month. And it's just so it's so crazy the way that it all happened. And I love, first of all, I also want to say, second of all, I should say, because I already did first of all. I think Dr. Silkworth was very special. I think there are very few doctors then and now who were anything like him. But you referenced, right, like our synthetic knowledge. And I just heard this said the other day in a way that just like really hit me. But right, synthetic is man-made, right? No human power. No human power. And that he recognized that and was humble enough to say that I can't help you. And that was my experience, was with a counselor who was humble enough to say, therapy is helpful, but it's not enough. And I can't help you. So yeah, I'm grateful for the professionals that are able to do that. I wish there were more of them. And I'm grateful to have a doctor's opinion to understand that what I have has nothing to do with how I grew up and all of the things that happened. I have a physical allergy and a mental obsession. There's only two things that I have problem with my alcoholic foods. I have a problem with alcoholic foods when I eat them, and I have a problem with alcoholic foods when I don't eat them. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Heidi. Claudine B, you're up.
Hi, I'm Claudine B, recovered compulsive eater. Rachel, thank you so much for your share. It's shares like that that make me unafraid to admit things in myself. So I appreciate that. I related to so much of it, the dissociation growing up and many different things, but I'll never forget. I was in another fellowship one time, and this girl came up to me and she said, "Claudine," and I said, "Yes." And she said, "It's so good to see you." And I didn't know who she was. She said that we hung out through high school, that we stayed in touch after. I didn't know who she was. I couldn't remember anything. And there's so many patches during my life that I can't remember. And the other thing that's so sad is that's pretty common. There's so many people that had to do that just to cope. But the other thing is just, I so relate to the fear, when you get to certain points where professionals are saying, okay, this is real now. And one of my the physical before I came back, it's the first time she ever called me afterwards. So I thought, oh my gosh. And she said, "You're pre-diabetic now. So we're here now, and you've got to do something." And then she recommended Zoom. Not Zoom, but Noom. What is it called? I can't remember. But it was just like I just thought, oh my gosh, I know what I need to do. She goes, "Can't you just lose 10 pounds?" And I thought, you just don't get it. You just don't get it. But God did. God got it. And he got me back in here through somebody really special, and it saved me. And I'm so grateful, so grateful. And I'm so glad that you found what you needed. I mean, you may not feel like it inside, but you really do radiate peace and happiness. So thank you for your share.
Thank you, Claudine. Amy L., share with us, please.
Hey, everyone. Amy here in California, recovered compulsive eater one day at a time. And where are you, Rachel? I just want to thank you. I can't see you, but I know you're there. Anyway, somebody said before me that it is a very amazing experience to week after week witness someone's transformation. And I know I've only spoken a couple of times to some of you, but we recognize it when we see it. It's like when Bill met Ebby and you see that light in their eyes. And so it's always such a gift. So thank you, Rachel, for allowing us to walk with you and witness that transformation. I related to so much of your story. And, you know, I was maybe different in some ways, that in that I controlled my disease a lot in my youth. I was anorexic. I was exercise bulimic, laxative bulimic. And I prided myself that I would never reach those big numbers. And I would sit full of pride in an OA room, this is decades ago, and say, never me. Well, fast forward, the progression of my disease is that I was a failed anorexic and bulimic, and I lost all willpower. And after my kids were born, I could not stop eating. And, you know, this, what you said when you came, when you read this chapter and you read, it's not our fault. It's not our fault, but we are powerless until we find this solution. And, you know, when my weight started to go past my 6'5" husband, you'd think that would scare me. And it did, but I was powerless. I didn't stop. So I want to just add one thing from the doctor's opinion for someone who's had multiple relapses and been in and out of these rooms for, I think, 38 years now. I had to look at the allergy when I came back after relapse as more than my alcoholic foods. I had to look at behaviors, and that helped me tremendously. I do believe I am allergic to volume. And for me, that's not just sugar, flour. It's practically anything. And so that was a huge step towards freedom, to acknowledge that the allergy of the body and the obsession of mind can relate to behaviors around food. Thank you. My time is up.
Thank you, Amy L. I think we'll stop the recording now for unrecorded questions or shares. Would the Zoom hosts please stop the recording?